Hi, it's Greg and Lucky.
And this is our podcast. If you don't catch us from 5 to 9, this is what you missed.
Have you ever gone onto Facebook or any social media to look up somebody from high school, maybe an ex or an old bully, hoping that their life didn't pan out well? Guilty. Certainly with ex-girlfriends I have, and it seems like they're doing just fine.
Their life didn't go into ruin without you.
No, you would think, right? Because what is it we all say when someone breaks up with us? You'll regret this. No, they seem like they haven't spent a second regretting it.
That's right.
Anyhow, there was a study put together spanning 50 years, and that found that bullies, when they were in high school, tend to earn more than the kids they bullied.
Mm.
A team in England tracked 7,000 people born in 1970, and they looked at how the teachers assessed their social and emotional skills when they were 10 years old. Then they checked back in when those kids were in their mid-40s. In general, the ones who got bullied were making less than the kids who bullied them. So it challenges the idea that, of course, bullies eventually get what they deserve. The researchers think it's because of the teachers. At least in the 80s and 90s, they may have created an environment that catered to kids who were more aggressive. It's possible that our classrooms are a competitive place and that children adapt to win, and that competition adapt to winning through competition that's aggressive. Then they take that to the workplace where they continue to compete aggressively for the best paid jobs.
Yeah, I could see some of that. The only thing I would, I guess, argue, or at least the notion that was there, the stereotype, is that a lot of the people being bullied were like the nerd category, who in the age of computers and electronics and engineering advances would have soared.
Yeah, that's it's changed a lot, certainly. The nerd world, I think Big Bang Theory had a lot to do with it. That television show alone kind of allowed the nerds to spring out of their shell.
And now Revenge of the Nerds didn't do a lot for them.
Didn't help, no. And it's just, listen, it's now, it's and rightfully so, it's observed more, and it's you know, dealt with, I hope, although the online bullying is tough to control. But I think that in schools, if a teacher sees or knows somebody is bullying somebody else, that gets shut down pretty quickly, I think, these days.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. It's just class sizes that got more difficult for a while.
Yeah. I remember there was a guy who we ended up becoming friends, actually. But there was a period of time, I want to say I was in like grade 5 or 6 or something. And this guy had it out for me. And every time we were walking home, he wanted to beat me up.
Mm.
So at some point, I came up with a brilliant idea of making sure I walked with my sister. Because I thought, no dude's going to beat another dude up in front of his sister.
Right.
And then at some point, he did take me aside and he goes, I know why you're walking with your sister, because you don't want me to kick your ass. And we kind of became friends. And we were pretty good friends for a while. Then I learned rather quickly, because I was always the tiny guy, try to be as funny as you can. Try to make people laugh.
Right.
You know, everybody, nobody hates somebody who makes them giggle.
Mm.
So I was a bit of a class clown just to avoid taking a beating.
Right. Yeah, I guess, well, everyone's got their buttons, mm-hmm. right? And their weaknesses, too. You can find those pretty quickly in bullies. A lot of it is insecurity, right?
The last time I was actually in a real fist fight was about grade 3 or 4.
Okay.
And I got my arse handed to me. Allison kicked the crap out, and I'm not kidding. Allison, she beat the hell out of me. Did you ever own a pair of Vans, the shoe?
Yeah, I think at one point.
Yeah.
My BMX days.
Well, they might not be around today if it hadn't been for Sean Penn wearing those checkered slip-ons when he played Jeff Spicoli in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And 40 years later, the owner of Vans finally had a chance to thank him. Steve Van Doren, the son of the company's co-founder, was in Hawaii, of course he was, about a year ago when he was tipped off that Sean Penn was in a nearby restaurant. So he went in, introduced himself, and told him, "You made my life so much better because of what you did for the brand." Then he gave the owner of the restaurant his credit card and paid for Sean's dinner.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a nice move.
Well, and supposedly Sean showed up on set. I think Cameron Crowe, who wrote the movie, told this story that he just went out and bought those shoes and thought, well, this is good. My guy's a surfer dude.
Right.
These will look good. So he made that decision to slip those on.
Vans were great because they were slip-ons.
Mm-hmm.
Had to love that.
Today's Skecher.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us are going to be surprised by this. Jerry Seinfeld is now a billionaire.
A billion's a lot.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised that he wasn't a billionaire already, just given how much we know he's made off of Seinfeld and syndication.
And I'll bet he's not even low-level billionaire. I bet he's mid-range billionaire. I don't know. But he's a billionaire. And he made a lot of money, of course, off that show. Most of his fortune came from Seinfeld. Jerry has made $465 million in syndication deals alone. And when you think about, like, syndication, you're basically making all this money for doing absolutely nothing.
Well, for work you've already done.
Yeah. $94 million he made from Netflix for their streaming deal. Well, I'm glad I was able to help out.
He chipped in a quarter.
Yeah, that's right. He made more than $100 million from touring since the 80s and owns $40 million in real estate. And I believe there was a story about how he had bought like a condo in Manhattan just to gut it so that he could park all his Porsches.
Yeah.
Became his own garage, a condo.
Wow. I just looked it up. They say Michael Richards, who played Kramer, of course, his net worth is $30 million.
He's still worth $30
million. Well, I mean, yeah, he'd be getting, does he not get a little piece of the syndication?
Not a lot.
Not much, though, right?
Just because he blew up his career, you know, way back when he was screaming the racist comments at people in this crowd at a show he was doing.
I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus has got to do much more. Jason Alexander had other things in movies and such.
And she comes from a lot of money, too.
Right. That's true.
Her father was some big shot. Yeah, I know that they I guess have patched things up because they all showed up on Curb Your Enthusiasm at one point, but I think it was a bit rocky there for a while when the rights were being divvied up when it came to like DVDs and residuals from reruns, and Larry and Jerry were taking about 99.9% of everything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there has to be some bitterness over the fact that, you know, with Jerry, they all acted together as a cast. But, and while you may understand that, yes, his name was literally on the show and he did all the writing. It was his concept. He came up with it and he brought you in on it. You know, so while you have to be thankful that you got the part, there's got to be, especially at this point, this far off after, there's got to be some bitterness knowing that, okay, he's a billionaire and I'm by no means struggling, but
no,
by comparison.
Yeah. I mean, I still sitting on $30 million. I guess Michael Richards isn't missing any meals.
No.
But, yeah, when you compare the two, and really out of that entire cast, just for his over the top character of Kramer, I mean, I think many would consider him to be the standout star of that.
Right.
I mean, they all had their moments and George was great. That's the problem too, is that Jerry was probably the weakest link in the whole thing.
Definitely so.
You know, but yes, you're right. He and Larry wrote it and came up with it all. So they were there at late at night. Writing stuff while the rest of them were at home.
Anyhow. They also, you know, and this happens everywhere. And by that right, they took the risk, right? The others were just actors who came in and played a role.
Got hired.
If it hadn't worked, they would have gone on and done others and done other roles. The problem is that they were so typecast by the success of those roles that it was very hard to move on. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, the only one who really could, you know, broach into a similar but different character.
It took her a long time too. She had a few kicks at the can before she got Veep, and then that was, I think, her most successful thing since
Seinfeld.
Adam Sandler, many would say probably his best movie ever was Happy Gilmore. Well, it turns out there could be a Happy Gilmore too.
I heard about this shooter shooting off his mouth in a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam supposedly showed Christopher McDonald, who was Shooter McGavin, showed him a first draft of the script. And so we'll see. One of those things. Oh, I don't know.
It's been a long time, right? Almost 30 years since the original. They waited a very long time. Chubbs is gone.
Yeah.
No Bob Barker. I mean, the one storyline they could bring in, and it happened recently in the last couple of years, where a golfer named Will Zalatoris burst onto the PGA Tour a few years ago with, like, you know, bleach blonde curly locks looking like the caddy from Happy Gilmore.
And isn't there a story too that Will has that character's name engraved on a golf club, I believe?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does that character have a name?
He must have. Yeah. Or maybe he's got Happy Gilmore engraved on a club or something. So yeah, he's certainly obviously a fan. So yeah, it would be great to see. Like, maybe he becomes the... That kid's looking for work.
Yeah. You could totally do that. You could put Will Zalatoris in. He could be the tour champ.
Yep, for sure. Blake Lively has apologized on social media to Kate Middleton for making jokes about her in her Photoshop fail. Others are telling Kim Kardashian she should do the same, because many people have been making fun of Kate Middleton, and now she's announced, I got cancer.
Right.
So shut the hell up. And a lot of people obviously feeling bad about the things they said, or maybe they're not. I don't know.
Nah, you know, the Brits are so crazy. And you know, I was looking at a bit of the social media after she had made that announcement and posted it. She's only 42 years old. Mm-hmm. And to have major abdominal surgery and have it come back as cancerous too, and now receiving treatment for that. But the British are so, you know, and we are just as bad, because here, like, we are talking about it. Canada does quite often as well with Hello Magazine and such. Mm-hmm. But we want to know everything about them, but hate them at the same time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're clamoring for information, talking about it, rumoring as to what it might be. And when they find out, you get people going, well, is she going to private hospital or public hospital? Who's paying for this?
And you wonder, too, will this bring Harry and William back together a little bit? Well, Harry, I know that him and Meghan put out a statement. Well, Meghan actually said, oh, yeah? Well, I've got double cancer. So whatever. The movie Titanic runs 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Okay.
The exact time it took for the Titanic to go down in 1912.
Ooh. That's creepy.
Isn't it? The collision with the iceberg reportedly went on for 37 seconds, the same length as the conclusion in the film. Or is it the collision in the film, sorry?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they did that.
Right, down to the...
They timed that properly?
Yeah.
That wasn't done by accident.
Man, you think about that.
The second one, not the first.
Yeah, right. I mean, if it had sunk in 37 seconds, then of course, okay, horrific, but at least people die fast. But to know this thing is going down for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The horror that goes on.
Like with a plane crash, a car accident, it's all terrible. It's all horrible, but usually over relatively quick. A plane, but to be sinking slowly like that.
But isn't it that they didn't know?
A lot of them didn't.
Like, right. They didn't let them know for the first while that there was actually that devastating a problem. I think the anniversary is coming up next month, or in a couple of weeks. It's early April.
Well, it was 1912, so we would have passed.
Yeah, I think it was April 12th or so, yeah.
Oh, was it? Oh, April.
I think it was in April.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, not good. I mean, that scene in that movie when the mother lies down in the bed with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Say their prayers to know full well they're... Oh, brutal. And I don't even like children.
April 14th, that's what it was.
Is that when it was? Matthew McConaughey is terrified of revolving doors.
Terrified?
Yeah. Johnny Depp is terrified of clowns.
Okay, that's shared by many. The revolving doors, I'm not so sure.
Tyra Banks is terrified of dolphins.
Okay.
Strange.
I mean, I could see. I'm still stuck on Matthew McConaughey and revolving doors. I can see being apprehensive.
Yeah.
Or maybe choosing, you know, a regular door if there's an option, but terrified.
Terrified
seems
a bit extreme.
It's strong.
Like, I have family members who are, I don't know that the word is terrified, but just hate getting in into elevators.
Okay, claustrophobic.
And, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Try to think of, I'm terrified of success.
Well, you've done a good job of avoiding it for this long. Congratulations.
I don't want it because it frightens me. It's funny, the other day I got upset because I had forgotten to buy my Lotario ticket
for
Saturday night. And it's up around $1 million, which is always, you know, primo spot to be in. And so I kind of, oh, I forgot. And then Maria looks at me and she goes, why don't you try to punch up occasionally?
Wow.
Yeah. And I said,
did you come out swinging?
I said, I settled for so little so many years ago.
Wow.
I think she
was there a smile on her face when she said this?
Yeah, it was kind of, I mean, we're always snapping at one another.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, she's probably not wrong. I'm sure the fact that I only work 4 hours a day, I'm sure there's a lot more I could be doing.
It tends to grind some gears. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. The killer in Silence of the Lambs, the killers in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and the killer in Psycho are all based on the same serial killer from the 1940s and into the early 1950s, Ed Gein. Now, Ed had a great little trick he liked to do where he would kill people, and a lot of them, and then wear their skin. Yeah. Yeah. Ed.
Okay, so they're not talking about Hannibal Lecter. They're talking about Buffalo Bill, right?
Probably, yeah, yeah. Hmm. Ed didn't start off so great. He was living on a farm with his mother and numerous stepfathers. And one day, when Ed wasn't doing what he was told, his mother decided a good way to punish him was to take his dog outside and right in front of Ed, at the tender age of like 11, slaughter the dog. So, you know, when you're raised in that kind of environment, chances are life's not going your way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why do I have so much information on Ed Gein?
What Netflix show are you watching?
I read a book. what do we got here? Oh, in the 1980s, Russia gave Pepsi submarines and other naval ships to cover the cost. Oh, gave Pepsi. I see. Okay, I should read these things first.
Right.
In the 80s, Russia gave Pepsi to submarine ships to cover the cost of stocking the country with soda. That does not make sense. They gave Pepsi each a big fleet that brief. Oh, Pepsi.
They gave Pepsi Company.
Right.
Actual submarines.
Yeah, to cover the cost of the Navy. There you go. So
really?
Pepsi controlled the sixth most powerful military in the world.
Wow.
At one point. Yeah. I'm going to get better at this if I try. If I just really put in some effort.
Maybe you should punch up a little higher.
I'll take that from her. I won't take it from you. Asphalt isn't a modern invention. It's been around more than 2,500 years. And it's a Greek word, which I would never try to pronounce.
Okay.
But it means secure.
All right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Back to the pop stuff. Mixing alcohol with diet pop gets people drunk faster than mixing alcohol with regular pop.
Really? Because I don't think that's why people do it.
You don't think so?
Well, I think it's, you know, I don't think it's because they want to get drunk faster.
Mm.
Like they think that, if I'm going to drink this much pop along with my alcohol, right. I might as well make it diet.
Yeah, the sugar in regular pop slows down the effect of the booze.
Oh.
Is there an alcohol? I think gin is the one I really don't like it even mixed. But I can drink almost everything else, like, just on ice.
Okay.
Not that I've ever, I don't think I've ever had, like, a rum, like, rum on ice. Just rum,
yeah.
Or I've done it. I have had vodka straight up.
Okay.
You've drank, rum straight up?
Yeah, well, like a dark rum.
Okay, it'll be good on ice, like a spicy rum, right?
Yeah, spiced rum on ice or a good Jamaican rum, a Caribbean rum on ice. I've certainly done that. A gin, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not a fan, except for the sandbaggers.
Right.
You're good. Pound those back.
What about rubbing alcohol? I'm good. On ice? Lovely. Lovely. Astronauts who go to the International Space Station need to become fluent in both English and Russian before they go.
That makes sense. It's a split project. Joint venture.
That's right. And Neil Patrick Harris was considered for Private Ryan, in Saving Private Ryan. But Spielberg wanted a relatively unknown actor, so he cast Matt Damon just before Good Will Hunting came out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was before?
I guess so. Yeah. I've never seen Saving Private Ryan. I mean, I know of it, like, as I know the opening montage is supposedly amazing.
Well, me as well, actually. I was supposed to watch that.
Yeah, you never got to it?
And never got it. Well, we had a weird day that day and didn't watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was weird that day?
We came across a body.
Oh, I remember you telling that story.
That was my my Stand By Me moment.
Right.
And so...
Dead in the side of a ditch or something, right?
Yeah, had some sort of medical episode.
Wow.
And driving his truck, and we got flagged down. It was a bunch of us from university, our house. We were on the way to a wake. And
that's a hell of a day.
It was. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And so
you don't need more death.
No. Got flagged down and got out to try and help.
Mm.
And there was nothing that could have been done at that point.
Did you grab his wallet?
No. Craig? No. Yeah. And a young guy, too. I think he was in his 40s. Really? Yeah.
That's not good.
It was a bad scene. But then that night, we were going to go sit down and watch a movie and thought maybe Saving Private Ryan wasn't the one to go.
Yeah. At the end of that kind of day, you need, like, Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Something like, hey, this is good for you. Toupees are cool now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not there yet.
Supposedly they've gotten a lot better since their heyday in the 80s. Because there was a time, right, where men would go bald and it was just the most embarrassing thing. And, I always felt bad for my brother-in-law because I've known him 30-something years. So he was a young man when I met him. And I think he lost his hair when he was like 19 or 20.
Mm.
And I remember people always, you know, throwing shots at him and stuff. And
it's now so much more normalized.
Yeah, a lot of guys shave their head. Like,
right.
Being bald is not a bad thing anymore. But I don't know. It just probably was thought as a weakness. When really, I actually think, and I don't know this to be true, but I think it might be. I think it's got a lot to do with testosterone levels. And, you know, you'll see in a lot of, like, tough guys, alpha male types, they usually go bald.
Mm.
So it's got something to do with the more manly, perhaps, you are.
Right.
That's why I have this flowing head of hair. Because I can barely spell manly.
Explains your locks.
Yeah, that's right.
I've seen the army receding a little bit up there. Certainly in the back.
You know what? I'm telling you what one of the problems is. You wear baseball caps too much.
I've been told this, but they don't, the pressure on that isn't on necessarily the back of the head.
It's rubbing it. I think it's just because it's rubbing it all the time.
Here's the issue I've noticed lately. And, I've got almost like a divot in my head. And I think it's from where my CPAP band.
Oh, maybe.
Like, it's where the headphones go.
Yeah.
And we wear them quite often, like every day, obviously. But I also wear this thing at night, right? It's kind of like headgear. And if I came down to having to shave my head, I think I'd look quite alien now.
Do you feel an actual divot
like
in your head?
Like, I can feel a divot. And I'm thinking, man, if it came down to it and I had to go to the scalp, it would look really cranium, like bad.
I remember, so I shaved my head for this cancer awareness charity event we were doing. And I was kind of concerned about the same thing. Like, how does my skull look? Like,
yeah, you want to know you got a good shaped head. There are dudes that shave their head and it looks like their brain's exposed.
But I don't know. You might be. You're probably feeling it more than it actually is.
Right.
Because I can't imagine that that the top of headphones or your CPAP machine, I mean, that's a skull there. I mean, it would take a lot of pressure to put a divot in that.
Yeah, but you just think if it's like it's been every night for over a decade, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it just kind of forms to it. I don't know. It's just the concern that hits.
No, for sure. But listen to this. This is good for you. The new toupees, the good ones, they're stitched into a piece of polyester. It's real hair, and the polyester is thin enough to sweat through. They glue it to your scalp, and they give you an exact haircut you want. You can shower in it. You can go 6 months before it needs reapplying.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I don't know if I could do it, to be honest. I mean, I'm fairly thin-skinned, but I'm also married.
But you know what else? Okay, but yeah, and I understand this, honestly, for
if
you.
If you're young and in the dating world and it's a real concern, with your self-esteem.
Well, I think also for you because you're on camera for hockey, so you want to. You know, you're probably concerned, well, if I did go down to the wood, how would it look? But I would suggest you do this then. Once you know you're done with hockey for a good stretch, like I'm assuming you might have a couple of more games coming up. I don't know. But if you're done now till the fall,
right?
You could take it to the wood because then it would come back in by the time hockey started again.
Yeah. Well, and I did it once, like in university. I shaved it kind of right down, not totally bald, but basically like a brush cut and really low. But and it wasn't bad.
Mm.
Certainly very easy to maintain.
It's kind of great.
And take care of.
Yeah, I liked it.
But
I scared the hell out of the kids. They came home and I was sitting there bald. They didn't know what the hell to do.
I mean, and my dad was when he went bald young.
Mm.
He'll blame it on me. But he would hang on. He had a couple of hairs.
Oh, really?
That he would just kind of hang on to. And I see that every now and then. You see that the dude is just like,
let it go.
You got to let that go.
Yeah. Yeah. Let it go. Anyhow, there's answers for you. I mean, these things aren't cheap, these new toupees. They could go for several $1,000.
Okay. Well, I mean, when you factor in what you pay on maintenance, you know, with the shampoos, the conditioners, the styling products, the haircuts. All of that together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like you to go get a toupee and come in looking like Dave Grohl. Just all of a sudden, this crazy.
You can just go to the party store and get a mullet.
You know, and it would be funny if nobody even acknowledged it.
Like, right.
You come in and the hair is blowing in the breeze.
I had done that once for Halloween costume and did like, it was like a small afro.
Mm.
And no one knew.
Didn't even know.
I walked in the bar and was just like, wow, I didn't know you had that.
That's a good head of hair.
It's good.
Did you get laid?
No.
Oh. For Wild Fork in Whitby, it's Ted Reeder, the godfather of the grill. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Craig. Good morning, Lucky.
Ted, how are you?
I can't complain, you know. Living the dream, although that dream some days is more like a nightmare.
For all of us. Ted, I was at the grocery store yesterday, and as we make our way towards Easter, I noticed there's a lot of hams, a lot of big, hefty hams sitting in the meat department. And I thought to myself, why is it, and I would assume, that most hams are pre-cooked. Why is it that hams are pre-cooked, but other meats aren't?
Well, with a lot of the hams, it's such a big piece, and it's an expensive purchase if you're purchasing it raw, and then to try and cure it and work it through and then cook it, it's a lot of work. Mm. And so hams come, it's nice and efficient. You can buy spiral cut hams, which are really, really dead easy. But what you're wanting is to look for a really top quality ham, bone in versus boneless.
Why is that? Why is it better with the bone in?
Well, it depends on the ham that you're getting. Some ham is the lower quality hams are an emulsified product. So they take the pork, they grind it up, they form it and mold it and prepare it.
Oh.
Others are made from whole muscle. And whether it be the whole leg or part of the leg, like the thigh, depends on the quality that you're buying. And so you've got to look at it, and it is an investment nowadays when you're looking at things at the grocery store. I was at the store yesterday, and I looked at hams, and I think a boneless, full muscle quality ham was about $35 for a very small piece.
Wow.
And, you know, it's pricey. I did see some lamb legs on special and thought, well, that's a pretty decent deal for a leg of lamb. And the key with going back to the ham, the key with the ham is don't overcook it. Just warm it. That's all you've got to do.
Okay.
It's fully cooked. You can take that cooked ham and slice it up and eat it just as it is, or it's better just to warm it slightly. I usually put a little liquid in the pan, put it on a rack, cover it over. There's no need to smear it with brown sugar and pineapple and all that stuff. Just enjoy the smoky flavor of it and just warm it lightly. Internal temperature, maybe at the most 145 degrees.
Okay, Ted, so that's Easter Sunday taken care of. The one that I tend to fear is Good Friday, because you don't need a lot of fish in my household. We should be eating more of it. I know I've come across some good fish to be had, whether it's at Wild Fork and you can, get it. It's frozen. And of course, whether it's a bassa or a mahi-mahi, it would seem to be simple fish, but how do I prepare them?
Well, I was at Wild Fork recently, and I picked up some mahi-mahi, and it's a great tropical fish to have, firm-fleshed, really, really simple and easy to prepare.
And not a really fishy fish for those that are, you know, they don't maybe like the taste of a salmon or something that's a little more, taste of fish. Mahi-mahi is pretty mild.
It's very mild, and it's great. Simply dredge it in a little seasoned flour. Put some salt and pepper in some flour if you want. If you want to stay away from the gluten, you can use a gluten-free flour. Dredge it, and then pan fry it in a little mixture of oil and butter, and then baste it with that. Just get it nice and golden brown. Baste it with a little of that melted butter. Squeeze a lemon juice. That's all you need. You don't have to complicate it. Quick and simple. The other great thing about it and it's dead easy, shake and bake it, man.
Oh, shake and bake is the best. It's like what do you think of the pre-made beer batter mixtures you can buy?
They're great.
Yeah.
Yeah, they work. They work. Follow the instructions. Read the instructions. Don't be a Kregger and just, think you know what you're doing.
No, here's the thing. I know I don't know what I'm doing. I've been faking it my entire life.
Yeah, you know what? I never thought about the shake and bake on the mahi-mahi.
Yeah.
It works great, and you can put it into your air fryer if you want, if you have one of those, or just pop it into your oven, 425 degrees. And the key with any kind of fish is you're probably looking at about, with that mahi-mahi from Wild Fork, you're probably looking at 12 minutes to cook that thing at the most.
Okay.
Nice hot oven, pop it in, pull it out, and you're all done. Quick and easy. Don't treat it like a turkey and say, I got to cook my fish 4 hours in advance then.
Well, and the thing too with fish is, unlike red meat or chicken, certainly, even if it is a little undercooked, you're usually okay, right? That's why people eat sushi. It's raw fish.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for sure. And you can have a variety, you know, if you're not into the fillets of fish, you know, go that route of scallops or shrimp. I love shrimp. I think shrimp are just fantastic. Quick tip on shrimp for you guys. When you get your shrimp and you've thawed them and you've peeled them and you're there, sprinkle them with salt all over the shrimp, okay? Let them sit for about 10 minutes in the salt. Then rinse it off and pat them dry with paper toweling. And then once you have that shrimp and it's nice and dry, you've brined it in that salt just for a few minutes. And it brings out the natural flavor, puts a little more flavor into the shrimp. And patting it dry means that when it goes into a hot pan or onto the grill, it's not sloshing around in water. It's going to get a nice sear on it, and you're going to get a great texture.
All right, Teddy, if people want to talk to you about ham or fish or any grilling, how do they get a hold of you, pal?
You're going to find me at Ted Grills.
Rock Mornings with Craig Venn and Lucky. 94.9 The Rock.